You get off early?
No, just between jobs,
Arinda said.
You have a good workout?
Fair, Juihir said. Senator Jurfel signed up her two newest bodyguards with us this morning. I had to run them through the grinder to see how good they are. And? They've got potential, but they're not up to Coruscant standards, Juihir said. But we'll get them in shape. So, which jobs are you between?
Well, I was at Grand Moff Tarkin's office yesterday,
Arinda said.
We had a nice chat.
Yes, I heard about that, Juihir said, brightening. Driller said he actually got you in to see him. Congratulations.
Thank you,
Arinda said.
Not much happening today, so I thought I'd drop by here.
Great, Juihir said. So we doing a workout or lunch?
Neither,
Arinda said.
We're making an arrest.
Who?
You.
She watched Juihir's mouth drop open as Colonel Yularen and his agents filed silently into the dojo behind her.
Arinda, what are you doing?
Juihir asked carefully.
We're arresting a traitor,
Arinda said.
A woman who's been using her training position to suborn or blackmail high-level bodyguards and send them off to spy on their bosses.
She raised her eyebrows.
And occasionally to try to murder them.
What?
Juihir breathed, her eyes widening, her skin going ashen.
Senator Evadorn's bodyguard, Kaniki,
Yularen said darkly as he walked up to them.
He tried to kill the senator this morning. Apparently your indoctrination on the evils of the Empire was a little too effective.
We never told them to kill anyone,
Juihir protested.
They were just supposed to get information for...
She broke off, throwing a sudden look of understanding at Arinda.
That's right,
Arinda confirmed.
I'm the one who pulled the data Driller and Higher Skies have been collecting and handed it over to the ISB. Driller and everyone else connected to the group are being picked up right now. But given the Kaniki incident, Colonel Yularen decided he wanted to arrest you personally.
Arinda!
There's just one thing I want to know,
Arinda said, her throat suddenly aching with suppressed emotion.
Were you ever my friend? Or was I always just a tool to you?
Juihir stared at her as the ISB agents moved around behind her, binders in hand.
Yes, I was your friend,
she said quietly.
I wasn't involved with this until after Senator Ranking fired you. That was so horribly unfair. It showed me how corrupt the whole system was. It was only later that Driller approached me and...
Driller and Night Swan?
Yularen cut in. Juihir transferred her stare to him.
Driller mentioned someone with that name, but we only talked about what we could do to fix things, to make the Empire better for everyone.
And then you thought about me and figured you could use me,
Arinda said.
Poor Arinda Price, cast adrift in the swirling dregs of Coruscant, the perfect patsy.
It wasn't like that.
But close enough,
Arinda said. She looked at Yularen.
I'm finished. Thank you.
Wait!
Juihir pleaded as the ISB agent started her toward the door.
Arinda, I was your friend. I helped you out when you needed someone. Can't you help me now?
Arinda held up her hand. Yularen did likewise, and the agent stopped.
Here's what I'll do, Juihir,
she said.
Colonel Yularen is going to interrogate you. If you give him everything, and I mean everything, he'll send you to prison instead of having you executed.
Juihir's face had gone even whiter.
Arinda!
I'm on the road to power now,
Arinda interrupted.
If I achieve my goals, I should be able to pull enough strings to get you out in a few years. If not...
She shrugged.
Arinda!
But Yularen had already gestured, and the men were on the move again. Arinda remained where she was, not turning until the door closed again behind her.
"What about her?"
Yularen asked. Arinda turned, blinking away sudden tears. Hisishi was standing silently in the doorway of her office, watching them. Had Yularen just asked her for advice? Of course he had. Yularen and Tarkin had been in contact regarding the Higher Skies affair, and while Arinda's new status hadn't been officially announced, the colonel had probably been given the news.
Commander Thrawn said she was in the clear, didn't he?
That was his conclusion, yes,
Yularen said.
Did you find anything in the records to contradict that?
No.
Then I suppose we can let her go.
Arinda lifted a warning finger toward the Tagorian.
But I'd recommend you leave Coruscant as soon as possible. Your former employee might try to shift some of her guilt onto your back. She does that sort of thing to her friends.
Thank you, Hisishi said gravely. Mistress Arinda, Colonel Yularen.
Turning, she disappeared back into her office. Arinda smiled. Mistress Arinda. A meaningless title. A veneer of respect overlaying a deeper and more casual disdain. The title of the small and powerless. But she was done with it now. Done with it forever. Governor Price. Yes. That was better. Much, much better. Another week, Eli had gotten used to saying to himself. Another mission. This time it was smugglers. Small gangs working out of obscure systems. The Thunder Wasp had proved especially good at rooting out such blights upon Imperial commerce, and Coruscant had apparently taken notice. Of course, Thrawn owed at least some of that success to Eli's own talent at identifying and tracking shipping and supplies. That had led to successful attacks on no less than 4 smuggling operations, 3 of which had included black market Dunium, 2 of which had apparently included Night Swan. Eli scowled to himself. This whole Night Swan thing was starting to get out of hand. The Thunder Wasp had been in time to close down one of the schemes Eli had spotted, but they'd been too late to stop the other before it was abruptly shut down. Worse, Eli had identified at least 5 other operations that seemed to fit Night Swan's pattern that were out of the Thunder Wasp's patrol area, and thus out of Thrawn's ability to defeat. Thrawn always sent warnings to the commanders in the affected sectors, but the communications were usually too slow, or the ships were too busy with other matters, or the commanders simply didn't believe him. ISB was only marginally better, and even there, it was often only Colonel Yularen who took the report seriously. Thrawn always spoke of patterns and connections. After nearly 4 years of serving with him, Eli was only now getting the knack of spotting those patterns. Others in the Navy apparently weren't so astute. Probably they never would be. The one puzzle neither Eli nor Thrawn had so far been able to figure out was why Night Swan was so obsessed with taking Dunium away from the Empire, and what the Empire itself wanted with the stuff. They weren't building ships with it. Every time Eli ran the numbers, the amount of Dunium the Empire was gathering far exceeded any possible need. Were they stockpiling it against some future need for ships? Thrawn's discussions at the palace. Could the Emperor be planning something special? A series of expeditions into the unknown regions, perhaps? There were too many questions Eli didn't have answers to. But those questions paled before the one looming before them today. Namely, the question of why he and Thrawn had been suddenly summoned back to Coruscant. It couldn't be over the Sifar incident. Thrawn had already been cleared of misconduct over his actions there. Had Yularen discovered something new about Night Swan that he wanted to share personally? Or had the High Command decided they were tired of Thrawn's continual focus on the man and wanted him to stop harassing the other commanders just because he thought they weren't doing their job. Or had Eli perhaps crossed some unseen line in his searches and examinations of the subject? The fact that he'd been specifically ordered to appear with Thrawn was more than a little unnerving. "Do you know what this is about, sir?" Eli murmured to Thrawn as a group of senior officers filed into the room.
"No," Thrawn said. "But I find it interesting that you were also summoned."
So Thrawn had noticed that too. Not really surprising.
"Try to read their faces," Thrawn murmured.
Eli suppressed a grimace.
He was trying.
Had been trying since the officers began filing in. Focusing his attention on the admiral in the lead, he studied the man's expression and body language and caught his breath, his analysis sputtering to a halt as the last man in line appeared through the doorway. Grand Moff Tarkin. And suddenly, all bets were off. Tarkin's title was technically a civilian one, his position giving him authority across a huge swath of the Outer Rim. But he also wore an Imperial Navy uniform, and his duties and authority straddled both civilian and military venues. Which area, Eli wondered, was he representing today? The admiral in the center waited until everyone was seated. Then she rose to her feet.
"We are met this morning," she said, "to pay special honor to two of our own."
Eli blinked. Honor? So this wasn't another inquiry board or court-martial?
"Never has any officer of the Imperial Navy achieved such success in so short a time," the admiral continued.
Eli felt a whisper of relief, mixed with a hint of melancholy. So that was it. Thrawn had been called back to receive yet another promotion. Not that Eli begrudged him the recognition. On the contrary, he more than deserved it. Aside from the thorn in the side that was Night Swan, his record was an unbroken string of wins against the enemies of the Empire.
"It is therefore with great pleasure that this board confers upon Commander Thrawn the rank of Commodore. Congratulations, Commodore Thrawn."
And there it was. Eli smiled and tried to look happy, which he was, really, as he joined in the applause. Coming all the way to Coruscant seemed excessive for what was, for Thrawn, a fairly commonplace ceremony, but at least they could get back to space now. Even as the admiral stepped forward and handed Thrawn his new insignia plaque, Eli started mentally sorting through the files that ought to lead them to their next smuggler nest.
"It is also an honor and privilege," the admiral continued, "for this board to rectify a situation that has too long been allowed to stand."
Eli frowned, thoughts of lists and supply manifests vanishing. Was there a situation Thrawn had gotten himself into that Eli hadn't heard about?
"It is therefore with equal pleasure that this board confers upon Ensign Eli Vanto..."
Eli caught his breath. It was happening. It was finally happening. After all this time, they were finally promoting him to lieutenant.
"The rank?"
Lieutenant Vanto. The sound in his head was like a drink of cool, clear water after a session in the dojo. Lieutenant Vanto.
"Of Lieutenant Commander."
Eli felt his whole body stiffen. What had the admiral said? Lieutenant Commander? That was impossible. For an ensign to jump ahead that many ranks at once was unheard of. He must have heard it wrong.
"Congratulations, Lieutenant Commander Vanto," the admiral finished.
And the insignia plaque in the admiral's extended hand was indeed that of a lieutenant commander. "Congratulations," Thrawn repeated from beside him.
Thank you, sir," Eli managed. "And thank you, ma'am."
There was more. A few short speeches from the others on the board, more congratulations, stirring visions of the glorious future awaiting them all. Eli didn't really hear any of it. To his mild surprise, Tarkin lingered after the Navy officers had filed out again.
"Congratulations, Commodore," the Grand Moff said, nodding to Thrawn. "And to you, Lieutenant Commander," he added to Eli.
"Thank you, Your Excellency," Thrawn said.
"Thank you, Your Excellency,"
Eli echoed.
"A fine ceremony," Tarkin continued. "I'm glad I stopped by. Governor Arinda Price sends her regards and her own congratulations."
"I wondered if she might," Thrawn said.
There was, Eli noted, a hint of something in his voice. Some kind of private joke between him and Tarkin?
"She is well, I trust."
"Quite well," Tarkin said. "Eagerly preparing to take on her new post."
"I am pleased that things have worked out for her."
"As am I."
Tarkin reached forward and touched the new Commodore's insignia plaque on Thrawn's chest.
"Consider this a bonus."
"Thank you, Your Excellency," Thrawn said. "Please thank the Governor when you next see her."
"I will," Tarkin said. "Now I believe you have enemies of the Empire to deal with. Good hunting to you."
With a final nod to Thrawn, he turned and left.
"Once again, congratulations, Lieutenant Commander Vonto," Thrawn said. "I trust the wait has been worth it."
"It has indeed, sir," Eli said.
Distantly, he wondered what Lieutenant Gim would say when he first saw the former ensign's new rank. Probably nothing. Not much he could say to a superior officer. But his expression would definitely be worth seeing.
"And now we'd best get to our new ship," Thrawn continued, turning toward the door. "There will be a great deal to learn."
Eli frowned. "Our new ship?" Thrawn turned, a half-amused, half-knowing smile on his face.
"I see you were not paying attention at the end."
"I thought not."
"We're being transferred, Commander. I am now the captain of the ISD Chimera."
Eli caught his breath. Thrawn had been given an Imperial Star Destroyer?
"Congratulations, sir."
"Thank you, Commander," Thrawn said, the amusement growing. "Shall we go?"
"Yes, sir."
They headed for the door.
"What did Grand Moff Tarkin mean by your promotion being a bonus?"
Eli asked.
"I think it was merely a joke."
"Ah,"
Eli said. A Star Destroyer was one of the best possible assignments, almost the highest pinnacle of success the Imperial Navy could offer. It would indeed be an honor and a privilege to serve aboard one. And as a lieutenant commander yet. Before they left the Thunder Wasp, he promised himself he would definitely make a point of looking up Lieutenant Gim.
Chapter 20.
Seldom can one attain victory in warfare without allies. Some allies provide direct assistance, the two forces battling side by side. Other allies provide logistical support, whether weapons and combat equipment, or simply food and other life needs. Sometimes the most effective use of an ally is as a threat, his very presence creating a distraction or forcing the common enemy to deploy resources away from the main battlefront. But standing by an ally doesn't necessarily mean one will always agree with that ally, or with his goals or methods.
The Chimera's alarm had been muted by the time Eli reached the bridge.
"Another day," he thought tiredly as he stepped out of the turbolift car. "Another crisis."
Life under Commodore Thrawn's leadership was exciting enough, but there were times when the pursuit and capture of pirates and smugglers began to feel routine, and even a bit boring. Only today wasn't just another day, nor was it just another crisis. His first warning that something serious was going on was the group clustered around Thrawn beside the aft bridge hologram pod. Not only was Senior Comm Officer Lomar there, but also First Officer Karen Farrow and Stormtrooper Commander Ayer. Thrawn caught Eli's eye and beckoned him over.
"Lieutenant Commander Vonto," he said gravely. "Senior Lieutenant Lomar has just received a distress call from the troop transport Semper. The captain reports he's under attack."
Eli shot a look at the tactical display. If the positions and vectors were accurate, they were over 2 hours away from the scene.
"I assume no one else is closer, sir?" "No one with sufficient firepower."
Thrawn gestured to Lomar.
"Senior Lieutenant."
"The Semper has identified its attackers as the frigate Castulus and 2 squadrons of V-19 starfighters," Lomar said. "There may be more. The attackers have jammers going, and the Semper's transmissions are spotty. I've got my people scrubbing and sifting the recordings now, so if there's anything else in there, we'll find it."
He threw a hooded look toward Thrawn.
"His last transmission said he'd been breached and was being boarded."
"The attacking ships were reported stolen 8 weeks ago," Thrawn added.
Eli frowned. There had been something in the Commodore's voice.
"By Natswan?"
"Possibly," Thrawn said.
"The scheme was quite inventive, which could indicate his hand in the planning. But whether or not he was behind the theft, I do not believe he's involved with this attack. Overly violent attacks are not his usual style."
"Styles can change, Commodore,"
Farrow said, her voice brisk and with a hint of impatience.
"And with all due respect, I don't see how the ship's starting point matters right now as much as the fact that they're here and they're shooting at our people."
Eli winced. Commander Farrow had come with the Chimera, having served as first officer under the previous captain. She was never overtly insubordinate, but she was never far from that line either. Calling Thrawn's comments into question wasn't something a first officer was supposed to do, especially not in public. But Thrawn merely inclined his head to her.
"We are already moving at the Chimera's greatest speed to assist, Commander," he said. "And knowing their origin may enable us to anticipate their goals and future actions."
"It's a troop carrier, sir,"
Farrow said, the edge of impatience still there.
"I think their goal is probably to kill some Imperial troops."
"Perhaps," Thrawn said. "Perhaps not."
He gestured to Ayer.
"There seems to be something of a mystery about this particular transport."
"Yes, sir," Ayer said, looking uncomfortably at Eli. "As I told the Commodore, Commander Vonto, the Semper isn't carrying troops."
"It's empty?"
"No, sir."
Eli flashed a look at each of the others. "Excuse me?"
"I can't say anything more, sir, to any of you,"
Ayer added, looking even more uncomfortably at Thrawn.
"Major Ayer has received a direct communication from Coruscant, but is not at liberty to share the contents with us," Thrawn said. "Our orders are to deliver him and his stormtroopers to the Semper while we deal with the attacking ships."
"Understood, sir,"
Eli said, an unpleasant feeling settling in between his shoulder blades. Secret communications that were outside the normal chain of command always made him nervous.
"What if they need help aboard?"
"We won't, sir," Ayer assured him.
"What if you do?"
Eli repeated.
"We won't, sir,"
Ayer repeated. The apology was gone from his voice, his new tone making it clear that the subject was closed.
"I can't say any more.
I'm sure we will be informed at the appropriate time," Thrawn said. "Until then, our task is to reach the Semper before it is completely overwhelmed. Commander Farrow, you will run a complete check on the weapons and weapons crews. We are to be ready for combat the moment we reach the scene of the attack. Lieutenant Commander Vonto, contact engineering. If there is a way to increase the Chimera's speed, you will implement it.
One hour and 49 minutes later, the Chimera arrived, to find that all their orders were now irrelevant. The Semper drifted dead in space. Its crew lay scattered across the ship, all dead. The troop compartments were empty. The attacking ships, of course, were long gone.
Odd,
Vanto said, as he and Thrawn picked their way through one of the clusters of bodies. With the need for secrecy gone, whatever that secrecy had been about, Ayer had reluctantly permitted the two of them to join his stormtroopers as they finished sweeping the ship.
Blaster burns on some of the bodies, but not all of them.
Yes, I noticed that, Thrawn said. Several of the latter also have injuries to their heads and torsos.
As if they were physically hit, Vanto said.
He pointed at the blood marks on a nearby section of bulkhead.
And then we have those. Looks like most of the beating victims had their heads or bodies slammed against the walls and bulkheads. Note, too, that some of the marks are higher than the victims are tall,
Thrawn said.
That mark in particular. Do you see a pattern in it?
Vanto stepped to the wall and looked up at the indicated mark.
His forehead wrinkles with thought. His fingers hover over the mark, as if he is mentally tracing it.
More blood than most of them. Those smears look like they could be finger marks. Somebody writing in the blood?
Perhaps, Thrawn said.
The mark was blurred and seemed incomplete, as if the writer had been interrupted. Or perhaps it wasn't writing at all. Certainly it didn't look like any letter or combination of letters he was familiar with. Though if the writer had been injured, that might account for the distortion. But why would an injured person choose to write so high? And if it wasn't a word, or the beginning of a word, perhaps it was a symbol, or a glyph. He surveyed the crumpled bodies. As Vanto had noted, two had been killed by blasters, the rest beaten to death. None was tall enough to have easily made the mark. Vanto had come to the same conclusion.
I'd say this was made by either one of the attackers or one of the passengers.
Perhaps an examination of the troop quarters will tell us which,
Thrawn said.
Come.
A stormtrooper was standing guard at the hatchway leading to the troop quarters.
Sorry, sir,
the stormtrooper said.
His filtered voice is stiff and imperious.
No one is allowed inside.
I am Commodore Thrawn, Thrawn said. I wish to enter.
I'm sorry, sir, but I have my orders.
I'm giving you new orders, Stormtrooper, Thrawn said. The passengers are gone. The secrecy you order to maintain concerning the Semper is no longer an issue. Imperial officers and crew are dead, some of your own colleagues among them. Justice and retribution for the attack depend upon information. Some of that information lies behind you through that hatchway.
I'm sorry, sir, but I have my orders,
the stormtrooper said again.
His voice holds no recognition of the situation's urgency.
I'm your commander, stormtrooper, Thrawn said. You will step aside.
Vanto twitches at the sudden volume and vehemence. The stormtrooper likewise reacts with surprise. He hastily steps away from the hatchway.
Thank you, Thrawn said. He and Vanto stepped inside.
You disapprove of my words and tone?
I don't disapprove of either, sir, Vanto said. I was just startled. I don't think I've ever heard you shout in anger before.
I was not angry, Thrawn said. Some people will not respond to reason. Others refuse to consider alternatives to their normal pattern of behavior. In such cases, an unexpected breaking of one's own patterns can be an effective tool. What do you see?
Vanto stepped to the center of the sleeping area. He turned his head slowly, his eyes lingering on the rows of three-tiered bunks.
Those aren't standard-sized racks. They're at least half a meter too long. And aren't standard troop carrier racks four-tiered instead of three?
Yes, Thrawn said. These quarters are clearly designed for large passengers.
Doesn't look temporary either,
Vanto said.
The racks are permanently bonded to the walls, deck, and ceiling. So what kind of passengers was the Sempra designed to...
His words stop. His eyes focus on the connection rings set into the walls beside two sets of racks. His fingers squeeze together with such intention. They weren't passengers,
he said quietly.
They were prisoners.
Not just prisoners, Thrawn said.
Slaves.
Feyre was waiting when Thrawn and Eli returned to the bridge.
Report, Commander, Thrawn ordered.
I have the analysis of the attack, Commodore,
Feyre said, pulling up a schematic on the sensor display.
Looks like the most damaging fire came from the V-19s. They took out the shield generators, hyperdrive, and sublights, with the frigate mostly serving as a distraction.
Not unexpected, Thrawn said.
Established military doctrine.
He looked at Eli.
Nikki.
Mentally, Eli shook his head. All these years speaking basic, and there were still occasional words that escaped him.
Notwithstanding,
he supplied. Thrawn nodded his thanks.
Established doctrine, notwithstanding. If a well-trained starfighter squadron can penetrate point defenses, it is often more effective in striking power than capital ships. Note that the deliberate destruction of the hyperdrive indicates that their goal was never to capture the ship for their own use.
They were here to free the slaves,
Eli murmured.
Exactly, Thrawn said. Was there anything to indicate the attacker's species of origin, or training methods?
Nothing we spotted, sir,
Feyre said, frowning.
I'm not even sure how we go about determining that.
There are ways, Thrawn said. We will discuss them later.
He turned to Lomar.
Senior Lieutenant?
We've finished scrubbing the Sempra's audio, Lomar said. There are half a dozen species that could have made the sounds we pulled up, but only Wookiees match up to the size you described for the slaves.
Good.
Thrawn pulled out his datapad.
In that case, this blood mark can be interpreted as an emblem instead of writing. Very well. Commander Vanto, to the computer.
Yes, sir.
Eli sat down at the nearest terminal.
Ready.
The slaves will have come from Kashyyyk,
Thrawn said. His eyes narrowed as he scrolled through pages on his datapad.
But there will have been an off-world processing center to test for health and other qualifications before they were sent on to their final destination. Using Kashyyyk and our current position as endpoints, search for that center's likely location.
Unless they were in a hurry, there's no reason they had to come direct,
Feyre pointed out.
They could have been processed anywhere from here to Alderaan.
Haste is not so much an issue as efficiency, Commander,
Thrawn said.
If there has been a steady stream of such transports...
He paused, then continued scrolling.
At any rate, the Sempra was permanently altered to carry Wookiees or creatures of their same size. It seems reasonable that the processing center is equally permanent. Commander Vanto?
I've pulled up everything within a 90-degree double cone, sir,
Eli reported.
There are a lot of systems in there.
It will be a military base, Thrawn said, owned and operated solely by the Empire. It will be relatively isolated, closed to outside traffic, and with a higher level of imported material than the listed crew complement would suggest.
Why don't you just look for shipments of Wookiee food?
Feyre suggested.
I don't think there's anything special about Wookiee food, ma'am,
Eli said as he continued keying in the parameters.
Even if there were, the shipments would be disguised as machinery or other items. Not much use having a secret slave center if you're announcing to the galaxy that you're feeding a lot of extra mouths.
Precisely, Thrawn said.
He was still gazing at his datapad, Eli noted, but the rapid-fire scrolling had ended. He must have found what he was looking for.
There will also most likely be another Imperial base nearby. Less secretive, but larger and close enough to provide a rapid response if necessary.
Yes, sir. Eli keyed in the final parameters. And that gives us... Land's End 26. It's an old customs clearing station the Separatists took over during the war and converted into a staging area. The Empire took it back, but hasn't done much with it.
Until now,
Pharaoh murmured.
Do you think we should warn them that one of their transports got whacked, sir?
We will do more than that, Thrawn said. Signal the helm, Commander Vanto, to take us to Land's End 26 at all possible speed.
Yes, sir, Eli said.
He keyed the intercom and delivered the orders.
Why would the attackers head there, sir?
Pharaoh asked.
Wouldn't they be more likely to bypass the station and take the Wookiees to some refugee planet?
You assume they already have all the Wookiees that they want, Thrawn said.
You mean they think they're going to raid the station for more prisoners?
Pharaoh asked, frowning.
Consider, Commander, Thrawn said.
Eli hid a smile. He knew this tone.
Bringing the Semper out of hyperspace at the precise point where the attackers were waiting would have been nearly impossible without assistance,
Thrawn continued.
That assistance would have had to come from either Land's End or the Semper itself. Either way, the implication is that the attackers had an ally and saboteur aboard the station.
And if he's still there,
Pharaoh said, nodding, understanding.
Why not sabotage the station's defenses while he's at it?
Thrawn inclined his head to her.
Very good, Commander.
If they've got a saboteur aboard, shouldn't we warn them?
Lomar put in.
Either them or... Commander Vanto, was the Commodore right about there being another station nearby?
Yes,
Eli said.
Bakelic base. A 20-minute flight away.
We must maintain calm silence, Thrawn said. We do not wish to alert the raiders that we are in pursuit.
With all due respect, sir, this still sounds like a bit of a stretch,
Pharaoh said.
If someone sabotaged the Semper, there's a fair chance Land's End picked up the same distress call we did and has already figured out they have a problem. Hitting an unsuspecting transport is one thing. Hitting a station that's primed and ready is something else.
Agreed, Thrawn said. Nevertheless, I believe they will make the attempt.
Because they're crazy idealistic meddlers and that makes them suicidal?
No, Thrawn said. Because they told us they were.
Pharaoh shot a startled look at Eli.
They what?
The drawing left behind amid the bodies, Thrawn said. We know now that the slaves were Wookiees. The mark we found was a clan symbol, underscored by a mark indicating warning or defiance.
Eli winced as he saw where Thrawn was going.
And defiance results in vengeance?
With tribal cultures like that of the Wookiees, very often, Thrawn confirmed. Even if there are no more Wookiees aboard the station to rescue, they will seek vengeance upon those who participated in the slaving. Since there is still the possibility that the station is unaware of their actions, they must attack as soon as possible.
Only Land's End might be ready for them,
Eli pointed out.
We shall hope,
Thrawn said.
Regardless, I fully expect us to arrive in time to catch the attackers in the act.
Still no signals from the station,
Vanto reported.
His voice is brisk with the anticipation of battle. His tone hinting of the swirl of possibilities and patterns within his mind.
Break out in 15 seconds. Weapon systems and crew standing ready,
Pharaoh said.
TIE squadrons ready to launch.
Signal to the Bakelec base standing by, Lomar said. Pre-recorded message loaded and ready.
A flicker of starlights, and the Chimera arrived. To find the battle had begun.
Base is under attack,
Banto snapped.
Reading one frigate, 22 B-19 starfighters. Base's starboard laser cannon slagged and silenced. Portside weapons still firing.
Launch TIEs, Thrawn ordered. Their first priority is to disable the frigate without destroying it. Signal Bakelec base, adding Commander Vanto's details to the alert. Signal Landsend and request status.
In many cases, an opponent's attack strategy betrayed his origin. Here, the battle had already devolved into chaos, with each attacking starfighter effectively its own strategist and tactician. But even in large-scale disorder could be found local patterns and connections. Thrawn studied the B-19's movements, watching for repetition and predictability.
Chimera, this is Colonel Zenok.
The voice from the breach speaker is tense, but not panicked.
Welcome. Your timing is excellent.
Colonel, this is Commodore Thrawn, Thrawn said. You have a saboteur on your station.
Found her, disarmed her, and locked her up,
Zenok said.
Unfortunately, not before she disabled the long-range comm and shut off the starboard side defense systems. Bakelec base is supposed to be on call. Can you whistle them up for us?
I have already done so, Thrawn said. I need the schematics of your base.
Right,
Zenok said.
On their way. I'm including a real-time internal sensor feed.
Very good, Thrawn said. Commander Vanto?
Schematics and sensor feed coming up now, Vanto said. The schematics appeared, with moving dots indicating the positions of the attackers and defenders.
We've been breached from the starboard docking hatch,
Zenok continued.
So far we're holding, but we're being pushed back. It looks like they're trying to take down our portside defenses so that they can send in another boarding party from that end and catch us in a pincer.
My starfighters are engaging those attackers, Thrawn said. Commander Vanto?
Portside V-19 forces split,
Vanto reported.
Half turning to engage TIEs, half continuing attack on station defenses. Starboard V-19's turning to defend frigate.
Too late,
Pharaoh called.
Her voice holds grim satisfaction.
We've taken out the frigate's hyperdrive. Our visitors aren't going anywhere.
Order the TIEs to shift focus to the V-19s, Thrawn said.
The movements of the station personnel had now revealed a pattern.
Colonel Zenok, are any of your personnel in sections A4, A5, or B5?
No, sir.
Are any slaves in that area?
There was a short pause.
I'm not at liberty to discuss such matters, Commodore.
If you wish to save your station, Colonel, you will answer my question.
Another pause.
There are some non-military personnel in Section B-5,
Zenok said.
Thank you, Thrawn said.
Pull all your personnel back to B-8 and hold there.
To B-8?
Zenok's voice holds confusion.
Yes, Thrawn said. Commander Pharaoh, I have marked 7 target points on the starboard part of the station. I require pinpoint accuracy from the turbo lasers. Can you do it?
Absolutely, Commodore, Pharaoh confirmed. Sending targets to gunners? Gunners, await your command.
Colonel Zenok.
We've pulled back,
Zenok said.
His voice still holds confusion, and now also wariness and distrust.
But this isn't a tenable position, sir. If we get pushed back any more, we're going to be in trouble.
You will not be pushed back, Thrawn assured him. Your battle is over. Turbolasers, fire.
On the schematic, the 7 marked points flashed as hull plates disintegrated. Behind them, the sensors painted 4 of the internal sections bright red as the air within them boiled into space.
What the hell?
Zenok barked.
Chimera, did you just fire on us?
Yes, Thrawn confirmed. I believe you will now find your intruders trapped in their current positions. Another pause.
I'll be roasted,
Zenok said.
The earlier wariness and confusion are gone. His voice now holds surprised understanding.
And B5?
Is intact, though it is now also isolated from the rest of the station, Thrawn said. We will continue the battle against the frigate and V-19s. I suggest you call on the intruders to surrender before you begin emergency access operations.
Yes, of course.
Zenok's voice holds relief, and even a small degree of humor.
Thank you, Commodore. Excellent work.
You are welcome, Colonel, Thrawn said. We will continue operations until the Bakelec reinforcements arrive. After that, we will leave you to deal with the prisoners while we retrieve the Semper and return it here. I presume you have orders that cover such contingencies?
We do,
Zenok said.
His voice sobers as the immediacy of the battle fades and he remembers the loss of the transport's crew.
We'll be ready when you return. And again, Commodore, thank you.
Commander Pharaoh, Thrawn said.
Enemy forces are down to the crippled frigate and 3 functioning V-19s, Pharaoh reported. I assume you'd like us to corral and capture the remaining fighters intact, if possible?
If possible, Thrawn said. If not, the Empire will have sufficient prisoners for interrogation among the rest of the survivors.
Yes, sir.
Banto came up beside him.
Commodore?
He asked, his voice quiet and disturbed.
What are we going to do about the Wookiees?
We will leave them here.
Banto is silent a moment. I'm not completely comfortable with the idea that the Empire is using slaves, sir.
Terms are not always as they seem, Commander, Thrawn said. They are called slaves, but they may in fact be indentured servants. They may be prisoners working off their sentence. They may have sold themselves into slavery as a means of repaying debts to others on their world. I have seen all those situations at times.
You really think any of those are likely?
No, Thrawn said, his tone hardening. But it does not matter. However these beings were pressed into service, they are now Imperial assets. They will be treated as such.
Understood, Commodore.
Chapter 21.
Each culture is different. Each species is unique. That presents challenges to the warrior, who often must ascertain from limited clues the strategy, goals, and tactics of an opponent. But the danger of misreading an opponent is sometimes even greater in politics. There, one seldom has the clearness of weapons activation or troop movement to warn of impending danger. Often, the only indication of conflict is when the battle has already begun.
The shuttle hatch opened, letting in the warm afternoon air. After all these years, Arinda had come home. She paused at the top of the ramp, taking a moment to let her gaze drift across the buildings of Capital City before turning to the more rustic Lothal landscape surrounding it. After the massive cityscape of Coruscant, the sight of wild vegetation was almost a shock.
"Welcome home, Governor,"
a voice called from the bottom of the ramp. Orinda looked down. Mokath Tua stood there, dressed in the blue and gray of an imperial minister, a hint of her blonde hair glinting from beneath her close-fitting conical helmet. Her hand held a data pad. Her smile held a hint of nervousness.
"Thank you,"
Orinda said, walking down the ramp and stopping in front of her. "It's been a while, hasn't it?"
Yes, Governor,
the woman confirmed.
"Over a year since you succeeded to the governorship, in fact."
Orinda felt her lip twitch. And in that year, she'd spent less than a week here, usually only a few hours at a time, ruling by proxy the world she'd worked so hard to get. Most of her time had been spent on Coruscant, making friends, bolstering Lothal's standing among the Empire's thousands of worlds, and chasing down incriminating bits of information for Grand Moff Tarkin. But finally, finally, she was here to stay. After the glittering lights of Coruscant, she still wasn't entirely sure how she felt about that.
"Which also makes it over a year since you were appointed Overseer of Industrial Production," she said. "So tell me, how is Lothal's industrial production getting along?"
"Quite well, Your Excellency, quite well,"
Tua said.
"I have all the relevant data whenever you're settled in and ready to examine it."
Silently, Orinda held out her hand. Tua's cheerful expression slipped just a bit, and she hastily handed Orinda the data pad.
"It's the file on top, Your Excellency."
"Thank you."
Orinda keyed to the file, watching Tua out of the corner of her eye. The woman had been an assistant minister during the last couple of months of Governor Azadi's administration. Azadi's sudden removal and arrest on charges of treason had been a traumatic event for the entire governmental staff. And even after all this time, it was clear that Tua wasn't completely over it. Hopefully the others were feeling likewise. Nervous subordinates worked extra hard and kept their noses very clean. Until they had a better feel for their newly returned boss, they would be polite, energetic, and easy to control or intimidate. Which was just as well, because the intimidation was about to start in earnest.
"What's this decline in refinery output?"
she asked, turning the data pad around.
20% in the past 4 months."
"It's the mines, Your Excellency,"
Tua said.
"They've been worked so hard over the past few years that they're running out of quality ore."
"Really?"
Orinda said, letting her voice cool a bit. Tua's throat tightened.
"They've been worked very hard,"
she repeated.
"It's also more and more difficult to find qualified miners. A lot of young people go into the academy. Commandant Oresco has set up a whole string of incentives for them. They just don't want to work the mines anymore like they used to. With the Empire running them instead of the old mining families..."
"Then you bring in miners from off-world,"
Orinda cut in. She'd already noted that the Imperial-run mines had logged the quickest decline in workers.
"My parents..."
She broke off, as a number on the list caught her attention.
"That Dunium vein is tapped out already?"
"That's impossible."
I'm sorry, Your Excellency, but it's true,"
Tua said.
"I've been down the mine myself. All the Dunium has been extracted."
"I see," Orinda said, pulling up the full data spread on Price Mining. The fact that Ranking had blatantly kept the name was just one additional irritation.
"In that case, Price Mining isn't worth the effort being put into it. Shut it down."
Tua's eyes widened in shock.
Excuse me, Your Excellency?
Was the order unclear?
No, Your Excellency,
Tua said hastily.
Do you want it... is it to be closed right now?
Right now,
Orinda confirmed.
at the end of the current shift. See to it personally, Minister.
Yes, Your Excellency.
She turned and started to go.
Minister?
Tua turned back.
Yes, Your Excellency?
Arinda held out the woman's datapad.
I understand Senator Ranking is on Lothal at the moment,
she said as Tua hastily retrieved the device.
Have someone inform him that I want to see him in my office at his earliest convenience.
Her office in the government building was just as she'd left it. Neat, but only sparsely decorated. Azadi's supporters had looted the room of all his personal effects after his arrest, and Arinda hadn't bothered to replace any of them, nor did she intend to. She was here to work, not relax among trinkets and sentiment. She spent the rest of the afternoon and early evening reading through the data that had accumulated since Azadi's last report to Coruscant. Lothal's industrialization was proceeding at a gratifying pace, but there were still some serious deficiencies that needed to be addressed. It was almost sundown when the droid in the outer office announced that Ranking had arrived. To Arinda's complete lack of surprise, the senator barged through the door without waiting for permission to enter.
Welcome back, Your Excellency, he said, without a shred of actual welcome in his voice. How long are you here for this time?
Hopefully I'm going to be here permanently, Arinda said.
Wonderful.
He stopped at the edge of the desk, his face darkening.
Now what the hell is this about closing my mine?
Your mine? Arinda countered calmly. Forgive me, but I didn't realize you had a mine. I thought all mines on Lothal were owned or overseen by the Empire.
You know what I'm talking about, Ranking ground out. Your old mine. Price mining. My agreement with the Empire was for 10% of the profits.
That would have been reason enough right there to shut it down, Arinda said. But don't flatter yourself. Closing it was a strictly business decision. The Junium vein is tapped out, and there aren't enough experienced miners left to waste them on underperforming rock. Hence, price mining will be shut down, and its employees transferred elsewhere.
And I suppose you'll decide which people go where?
Ranking asked suspiciously.
I will leave that up to Minister Tua, Arinda said. But it seems only fair that the employees with the highest seniority be offered the best positions.
Those being the ones left over from when you ran the mine, I suppose.
That is how seniority works, Ranking hissed between his teeth.
I don't have to just sit here and take this, you know, he said. I can bring in my own experts and show you that the mine's production is at least on a par with every other mine on Lothal.
You could, Arinda agreed. But you won't. Would you like to know why?
I'm dying to find out,
he bit out sarcastically.
One, because price mining is too small to be worth a fight, she said, counting off fingers. You have other interests that pay much better, especially now that the Dunium is gone. Two, because every favor you burn on a worthless mine is a favor you can't call in for something else. I know how you work. You can't afford to waste favors on pride. She let her expression harden. And three, the only way I could have obtained this governorship so young is if I have powerful friends and patrons. Very powerful friends. And after all your digging, I dare say you still have no idea who they are. Until you do, you don't dare raise a finger against me.
For a long moment, they stared at each other across the desk. Then, with another soft hiss, Ranking inclined his head.
In that case, Governor, I believe our conversation is over.
I believe it is, Senator,
Arinda agreed.
Good evening.
She waited until he was gone from her office and the door watch droids reported that he'd left the